Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 7th, 2020. Front page. Midland man charged after MPD officer shot. Incident occurred while responding to disturbance call. From staff reports. A Midland man has been charged with aggravated assault against a public servant, a first-degree felony, in connection with an officer-involved shooting that occurred early Thursday morning. Texas Department of Public Safety Communications Officer Oscar Villarreal said Brian David Rubin, 46, is in custody at the Midland County Jail. His bond has not been set. A city spokeswoman said a Midland Police Department officer was treated and released early this morning after being shot while responding to a disturbance call. The officer was dispatched to the 3000 block of West Illinois at about 12:30 a.m. During the course of the investigation, the officer was shot in the leg, according to a press release. The officer was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries and was released. Rubin was not injured, according to the release. The investigation has been taken over by the Texas Rangers. Lacey touts experience in oil and gas. By Matt Stringer, Texas Scorecard. Editor's note. This is the first in a series of profiles on the Republican candidates for Congress by Matt Stringer of the Texas Scorecard. The Reporter Telegram is running the profiles with permission. From the West Texas city of Midland, congressional candidate J. Ross Lacey has a professional and political background reflective of the iconic Republican stronghold energy epicenter he calls home. Lacey is one of 10 candidates vying for the Republican Party nomination to succeed retiring Congressman Mike Conaway, who surprised residents when he announced last year that he would not be seeking re-election. The district is comprised either entirely or in part of 29 counties sprawling hundreds of miles across Texas from the New Mexico border of Andrews County on the western side, Hood County on the northeastern edge, and Llano County on the south. The four largest cities in the district are Odessa, Midland, San Angelo, and Granbury. Lacey comes into the race with a professional background in oil and gas. An energy industry entrepreneur, he currently works as the president of Lacey Oil Corp. and is the proprietor of CATI Well Service. Lacey outlined the importance of having someone from the oil and gas industry representing the district and how his professional experience in the energy sector sets him apart from the other candidates. "I am the only candidate with real oil and gas experience," Lacey stated. Lacey obtained a bachelor's degree in finance from the University of Texas of the Permian Basin and has a long record of both public service and civic engagement. Some of Lacey's lengthy volunteer civic record begins with his involvement in the Texas Young Republicans Federation, and he also served as a precinct chair in the local Republican Party and as an election judge. In particular, Lacey is planning on attending his 5th Republican Party of Texas State Convention as a delegate, a place where activists across the district have come to recognize him from presiding at caucus chair on numerous occasions. "I am proud of my civic involvement as a true grassroots activist." In addition to his political involvement, Lacey also has a record of public service, having been elected to the Midland City Council twice. Texas Scorecard asked Lacey what some of his top priorities would be if he is elected to Congress. "First, I want to make the Trump tax cuts permanent, for starters," Lacey responded, pointing out that the 2017 tax cuts were only put in place for 5 years. Lacey expanded further, saying, "My priority would be to serve as a true conservative voice for District 11 and to fight for freedom and liberty. Also, we need someone who will actually stand shoulder to shoulder with President Trump and not be another one of those Republicans who pretends to support the president but who are actually stabbing him in the back behind the scenes. Six key issues are listed for Lacey's campaign website, including the promotion of American energy independence, something President Trump has strongly advocated, securing the border against drugs and crime, defending the Second Amendment, and a strong pro-life stance. I will do everything in my power to fight for those most in need of protection, because every life is a blessing from God. Lacey is one of the candidates currently running who plans on joining the House Freedom Caucus if elected, and he is the only candidate running who boasts a major endorsement from a Freedom Caucus member, Texas Congressman Louis Gohmert. In addition to the congressional endorsement, Lacey carries support from three state senators, Donna Campbell from New Braunfels, Brandon Creighton from Conroe, and Dr. Don Buckingham of Lakeway. Lacey also stated his campaign was pleased to announce the support for former State Representative Tryon Lewis of Odessa and said they would soon be releasing a list of support from business and grassroots leaders across the district. Lacey's closing message to voters was, "I am a genuine conservative outsider. I won't be beholden to D.C. leadership like some of the other candidates in the race, and I humbly ask for your support to serve." Early voting begins February 18th for the March 3rd primary. Dear Abby, write Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate. Teen in sketchy situation resists efforts to help her. Dear Abby, my 15-year-old granddaughter has lived for the past several years in an environment with adults who have done drugs, can't or won't keep a job, and are in and out of jail. I want her to have a better life, and I try to explain what a responsible adult life looks like. But when I do, she accuses me of being judgmental and not accepting because these people are nice. How can I get her to understand that the lifestyle she's exposed to isn't good without coming off as judgmental? Signed, At a Loss for Words. Dear At a Loss, the lessons we teach others don't always have to be verbal. One way would be to expose your granddaughter, as often as possible, to people who have chosen a different way of life and are reaping the rewards for it. Perhaps then she will begin to draw her own conclusions and realize that she can have a different life if she's willing to work toward it. Dear Abby, my ex-fiancé decided to leave our relationship and our 10-month-old son, Nikki, about a month ago. He sees Nikki regularly and is a good father. I know our relationship is over and that it's not going to be fixed. To be honest, when I left, I was relieved. The other day I suggested to my ex that maybe once a month we would take our son out together to do something, like go to the park or the zoo. My reasoning is that Nikki needs to know that even though his mom and dad are no longer together, we can still get along. His response was that he didn't think it was a good idea. He doesn't want our son to get the wrong impression. I just said okay and left it alone. Is he right? Would it confuse our son, or is he being selfish? It seems unrealistic to me that we will never do anything together. My son is my number one priority, and I just want to handle it the best that I can for him. Please help me. Signed, Confused in Santa Maria, California. Dear Confused, your ex may have said what he did because he doesn't understand that you have accepted that the romance is really over. Don't accuse him of being selfish. Be patient. In the future, Nikki will understand that although mom and dad are not together, they get along. If you really truly do get along. As Nikki grows older, there will be events such as birthdays, sporting events, graduations, etc. You will probably wind up enjoying together, or eventually with significant others or spouses included. Dear Abby, I am a 13-year-old dancer, and I recently had a recital. The mothers came backstage to help their children change in the dressing rooms. A girl my age who has two lesbian mothers was near me while I changed. It made me feel self-conscious. I'm normally not like this, but it felt awkward, to say the least. I'm not against same-sex couples, but it felt weird. Am I overreacting? Signed, Midwest Dancer. Dear Dancer, I think so. Those two mothers were more interested in what was going on with their daughter than with you. If you plan to become a professional dancer or part of any branch of the performing arts, you will be changing costumes under all kinds of conditions. This means you will be around straight males and females, gay people of both genders, and occasionally trans people. It's a fact of life because separate dressing rooms may not be available.
Midland Festival Ballet takes Leap Forward with Iconic by Rich Lopez. Midland Festival Ballet is bringing something different to the stage this year. The company is foregoing its traditional performance in April of signatures such as Swan Lake or Giselle. Instead, MFB will present on Saturday Iconic, in which classical and contemporary come together. I know Susan was interested in pushing the company to do new and professional repertoire, Executive Director Rachel Kerr Ritter said. It is really a different type of show, and I think it will be really fun. Susan Clark, Artistic Director of MFB, is the instructor who leads the company through its choreography and performances. Iconic will take audiences from its more traditional roots to some contemporary country music in a four-part performance. The show begins with Act Two of Swan Lake, featuring special guest dancers Arian Molina Soko and Daisy Torriente of Pennsylvania Ballet in the roles of Odette and Prince Siegfried, with the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale performing the music. The performance moves into the Arensky Dances, a neoclassical work by former Atlanta Ballet director Robert Barnett, who Clark worked with previously. The dancers will be accompanied by a trio of musicians on stage. The third movement is a premiere piece choreographed by Kedia Garza to music by Arturo Marquez. Dan Zahn moves between neoclassical and contemporary ballet with roots in Latin music. The final piece puts Midland Festival Ballet in some new territory. The dancers will perform to select songs by Johnny Cash, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Laurie McKenna, and Robert Earl Keen, performed by local band Angel and the Bad Men. Pearl Walmsley was inspired after seeing them play live, and she choreographed this ballet, which shares the range of what ballet can be, Kerr Ritter said. It's been really interesting watching them work through this. The band, which has been together for about 2 years, took a break from working on its first album to venture into the world of dance for the piece, You Say, The Party Never Ends. We didn't know at all what to expect combining our music with this style of dancing, but this experience has been one of the coolest things we've gotten to be a part of so far, singer Angela Porter said in an email. Pearl and Susan took a big chance combining these two arts, and it is a spectacular combination. The choreography is amazing, and the dancers and staff have been such a joy to work with. We can't wait for Saturday's performance. Eschewing its more traditional shows for Iconic, Kerr Ritter sees this show as a potential gateway for those who haven't experienced ballet. I really get people who tell me they are excited to see Swan Lake or they want to see the band. People may not know what to expect, but I think that this production is a great introduction to any new audience members, she said. If you go, Iconic, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, Wagner Newell Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788, $10 to $49. On the net, MidlandFestivalBallet.org. The Women of Lockerbie brings tragedy and healing to stage by J.C. Lewis. Odessa College Assistant Professor of Drama, Kendall Kiker, was looking for a play to do in the Black Box Theater, which is more intimate than the Globe of the Southwest. He chose The Women of Lockerbie. The Women of Lockerbie is a dramatization based around the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 in 1988, Kiker said. The play takes place 7 years later in Lockerbie at an annual memorial service for the families that come in. Kiker said the play revolves around two storylines. One is a set of parents, the Livingstons, who lost a son in the crash, and he was one of the victims that his body was never found, he said. We see the mother, Madeline, really struggling to deal with this loss, even 7 years later, and how that has affected her marriage with her and her husband, Bill. The other storyline is about the laundry project the Women of Lockerbie undertook to help grieving families find closure, he said. What happened was, several of the women in Lockerbie wanted to take the clothing of the victims to wash it, fold it, and then have it returned to the families of the victims to help with closure, he said. They were met with pretty harsh resistance by the American government. We see that struggle between some of the women in Lockerbie and the one government agent working in Lockerbie. The play was written by Deborah Brevoort, who structured it to resemble a Greek tragedy, Kiker said. We have a chorus of women who at times speak to themselves, and other times they speak to the audience, he said. In the true spirit of a Greek tragedy, they help push the story along and fill the audience in on what has happened, while also commenting on things that are happening. Anna Miguel, a freshman theater major at OC, plays Madeline Livingston. She said her interest in theater started when her sister was in high school and taking theater classes. She said she saw what her sister was doing and wanted to pursue the same path. I just kind of fell in love with it, she said. My sophomore year at Permian High School, I branched out to other theaters nearby. She has done shows at the Permian Playhouse with a Kaleidoscope company, and last semester she was the stage manager for A Doll's House. She said she wanted to start with theater at a small school. I wanted to work up my resume and get my feet in slowly, Miguel said. I knew Kendall was new, and I liked what he was doing in this program. It was something that I was going to be comfortable in. Her character is a grieving mother who is introduced by wandering the hills of Lockerbie, Scotland, at night. She is a grieving mother who lost her son 7 years ago and is still unable to cope with it, Miguel said. Her grief got so much stronger than when she was back in New Jersey. Her part is really trying to find peace and comfort. For the Women of Lockerbie, she said she had to do extra research. I have had to do a lot of research with this part, which has been more sad than other research I have done for characters, she said. The play is being performed in the Black Box to show that the college has this other space, Kiker said. For some of the shows that have smaller casts and are a bit more intimate in nature, we do have that close, intimate proximity to the audience. We could easily do this show over in the Globe, but there would be a lot of separation from actors and audience. Where in this show we are sitting here in the front row of seating, and we will have actors a few inches from us, he said. We were looking to add a third show. We wanted something that wasn't going to have a very big cast, and that we felt would easily lend itself to this space and be able to work here. Our new technical director, Amanda Klipsch, had mentioned this show. It was one that I had heard the title of but didn't know much about. Kiker said that every show has its own challenges. There is no permanent seating, no set or light system, he said. We had to bring all of that over and figure out how we were going to orient things in here to make everything work. We lost an actor pretty late in the process, so we had to rearrange things. It has been a really good learning process as well. I think it is another way to see just what we can do here at the theater program at Odessa College. Kiker said the public should come out to the play to not only experience a play in the Black Box, but to understand times of tragedy and the need for closure. On a personal note, I was talking to one of our culinary arts professors. We were chatting about this show, Kiker said. He said, "It is kind of sad how we mark our lives by the tragedies we experience. Unfortunately, there are so many tragedies along the way that we tend to forget about some of them." If you go, The Women of Lockerbie, 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sunday. Tickets are $5 for military and people 65 and older, and $7 for adults. Tickets are free for OC students, staff, and faculty. Drew Fish celebrates album release at Rockin' Rodeo by Rich Lopez. Although country singer Drew Fish will officially release his new album, Wishful Drinkin', on Friday, he celebrates the release with his show tonight at Rockin' Rodeo. He has been performing the tracks for about a year already because the plan was to have the album out a year ago. "Yeah, we were a little behind schedule," he said in a phone interview. "There were some studio issues and schedules couldn't get lined up, so everything took longer than it should." In the meantime, he dropped some singles as a ramp-up to the release date. This worked in his favor. The song Better Place reached number one on regional charts. Don't You Know was a top five single. That didn't undermine the album's release because he had an ace up his sleeve when announcing the new record. "This album has my first duet and my first waltz. I'll be singing with Pam Tillis on my album. I mean, she has a Grammy, a CMA award," he said. "We didn't want to announce Pam on the album right up until the last moment before going to press." Fish's song was given to Tillis' manager, and when she heard it, she was on board. He flew to Nashville from Houston to record the track. Now Fish and his band are in celebration mode with a slew of concerts entered on the new album. "This new record still shows the diversity of who we are. No song sounds the same, but it all sounds like us," he said. If you go, Drew Fish Band, 10 p.m. today. Rockin' Rodeo, 4400 North Big Spring Street, $8. Online, rockinrodeomidland.com. Heat Index, today, History Lesson. Midland College opens the new exhibit, World War I Lessons and Legacies, with a lecture at noon in the Faskin Learning Center. The poster exhibit explores the war's impact on American life and how its legacy has influenced modern life. MC will host a schedule of lunchtime lectures throughout spring. The exhibit will be on display through August 31st. Friday, Sweet Tooth. Get an early start on Valentine's sweets with the annual fundraiser Chocolate Decadence at the Horseshoe Pavilion. The event is hosted by and benefits the West Texas Aphasia Center, which produces services and resources for stroke survivors and their families. This year, the event throws back to classic 1970s television with its theme, The Love Boat, A Valentine's Voyage. Whether you don your cruise wear, your disco outfit, or just some snazzy cocktail attire, the fundraiser will offer activities befitting of a cruise with photo booths, shuffleboard, roaming magician, and of course dinner, and a bevy of chocolate desserts. 6 p.m. on the net, aphasiawtx.org. Saturday, Moonlighting. The Museum of the Southwest and Drama Art team up for some nighttime stretching. The Blakemore Planetarium at MSW will host Blakemore After Dark Snow Moon Yoga. The class will be held in the planetarium's newest feature, Science on a Sphere, which will illuminate the space for all the poses and stretches. 6 p.m., $15. Roll on by. Lace up those skates and hit the rink with the whole family. Every Sunday, Casey's Nutty Roller hosts family night from 2 to 5 p.m. and then from 7 to 9 p.m. Rent either regular quad skates or inline skates for a family fun time together. MOSC Quintet No. 1 performed by West Texas Winds, Sunday, February 9th, 3 p.m., First United Methodist Church, Midland, 300 North Main Street, Midland, Danzy Wind Quintet and B. Durr, Opus 56, No. 1, Francais Quintet, No. 1, Ricciardi Quintet, No. 1 for Winds in D Major, Opus 124, MOSC.org, phone 800-514-3849, or at the door, $15 general admission, students free.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 7th, 2020. Section B, Faith and Philanthropy. Grace Lutheran looks back and forward with Jesus. Grace Lutheran began its 90th anniversary January 25th with a kickoff party through the year, through the years. We also highlighted many of the services, mission opportunities, and activities planned for the year 2020. During the event, the family of Grace participated in games and conversations with people of all ages. We reflected on our past and looked forward to our future. There is an old joke about how many people does it take to change a light bulb. With Lutherans, the comedic answer has been, zero, we don't change. Well, Grace Lutheran Church of Midland changed quite a bit in our 90 years. It began with a meeting in a house in January 1930. Soon a constitution was adopted, and Grace Lutheran was born. The first sanctuary was built a number of years later on Wall Street. When there was a need for more room in the middle 1960s, sites were looked over and the location of 3000 West Golf Course Road was chosen. The congregation moved on Easter of 1969. Additions were made to the facilities in 1998, 2012, and 2016. Grace has moved beyond the walls and is partnering with LCMS mission work in Peru, as well as other locations locally, regionally, and globally. So even though we have experienced change, some things will never change. We stand on God's Word. We share God's grace. We live His Word. We are about making disciples. We are celebrating 90 years of grace as we look to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, Hebrews 12:2. We are looking back with much gratitude for all the Lord has done in us and through us as we look forward to more gracious blessings the Lord has in store for us, because the one thing that never changes is the Lord's amazing grace that is evident every time the doors of grace are opened. Our 90th anniversary celebration continues with two more special events in 2020. On April 26th, our morning divine service will be a hymn fest based on our anniversary theme verse, Hebrews 12:2. On November 8th, we will have a Thanksgiving celebration service at 4 p.m. with a guest preacher and a catered sit-down meal following. Bob Pace is senior pastor of Grace Lutheran Church. Bob Pace, Grace Lutheran Church. First capital donation to MCDC will help provide new computers, from staff reports. First Capital Bank of Texas presented the Midland Community Development Corporation with a donation of $4,000 to purchase new computers for its staff. We're excited to give back and answer a community need through MCDC, which helps aid their cause of putting Midland and its residents first. First Capital Bank of Texas Midland Market President Jeremy Bishop said in a press release, MCDC provides financial and educational assistance to small businesses and first-time home buyers in low-income areas of Midland. As a community bank, we understand the need and the importance of providing affordable housing to residents in our Midland community, Bishop said. MSS Connections. Volunteer opportunities. These select area volunteer opportunities are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. This free service connects you with nonprofits in Midland County. Find new ways to connect and plug in with your community at mssconnections.org. The Share Autism Walk is the largest walk in West Texas and SHARE's biggest fundraising event. Volunteers are needed to cover a wide range of responsibilities, such as registration, T-shirt sales, and set up, tear down. Shifts will be available from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Join in the fun and support behind the scenes of this important awareness event. The West Texas Recording Library needs individuals to read periodicals that are already past due. Periodicals consist of short stories, poems, and recipes. Help the WTRL to improve the lives of people who cannot access the printed word. This organization offers audio versions of different forms of media to the visually impaired. Volunteers must be over the age of 16 and able to dedicate a minimum of 2 hours a week on your own schedule. Legacy Scholars and SIP hours are available. The Alzheimer's Association of Midland has ongoing needs for volunteers for various events throughout the year. Volunteers are periodically needed to help set up, clean up, and perform various other tasks during events such as the Walks for Awareness, the Education Conference, and advocacy meetings. Minimum age of volunteers for the Alzheimer's Association is 15, and opportunities are eligible for legacy scholarship hours. Christmas in Action needs volunteers to help organize the warehouse. This is a great opportunity for anyone with organization skills. Christmas in Action is celebrating more than 40 years in the Midland community. This organization repairs homes of low-income elderly and disabled who are physically and financially unable to do the work themselves. Volunteers must be over the age of 16. Help the Museum of the Southwest welcome hundreds of families to its campus during spring break, March 9th through 13th. Volunteers are needed to help run craft and hands-on activities and monitor galleries. Activities take place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This volunteer opportunity is teen and large group friendly. Midland Festival Ballet needs assistance with a variety of tasks around the ballet studio. These include cleaning, steaming costumes, organizing storage areas, and answering phones. This opportunity is open to volunteers ages 16 and older. Written and compiled by MSS Executive Director Autumn Fest. Calendar, February 7th through February 13th. Today, Sacred Scripts, 1,000 Years of Religious Texts. Ella Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, noelartmuseum.org, on display through February 23rd. Kendra Gives Back Party, benefiting Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, 5 p.m., Kendra Scott, 2900 West Loop 250 North. Chocolate Decadence, The Love Boat, A Valentine's Voyage, 6 p.m., Horseshoe Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail, $225 to $500, aphasiawtx.org. Night to Shine by the Tim Tebow Foundation, 6 p.m. Stonegate Fellowship, 6000 West Wadley Avenue. Saturday, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 9 a.m. Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri Avenue. Free Yoga, 9 a.m., Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland, 3301 Neely Avenue. Bring Matt. Dancing with West Texas Stars, benefiting the Crisis Center of West Texas, 6:30 p.m., Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street, $200, ccwtx.org. Queen of Hearts benefiting Midland West Rotary, 7 p.m. Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street, $80, eventbrite.com. That's eventbrite.com. Little Sweethearts Family Dance, 7 p.m. Midland YMCA, 800 North Big Spring Street, $25 per couple, $10 additional children. Sunday, Babies and Blessings for 2019 Babies, 9:30 a.m., First Methodist, Midland, 300 North Main Street. Monday, Gentle Healing Yoga, 5:30 p.m., Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle, free, 575-937-3609. Yoga class for cancer survivors. Tuesday, No Passport Required Cooking Class, Greek, 6 p.m., West Texas Food Bank, 1601 West Cliff Drive, free but tickets required, basinpbs.org. Permian Basin Buddhists, 7 p.m., Unitarian Universalist Church, 3301 Neely Avenue, meetup.com/Permian-Basin-Buddhists. Wednesday, Woman Only Wednesday, noon, First Baptist Church, 311 West 8th Street, Odessa, $8. Hello, Old Friends, Roaring Twenties Party, 6:15 p.m., First Odessa Worship, 709 North Lee Avenue. Thursday, Give Back Day, benefiting Head for the Cure 5K, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., on the border, 4306 West Loop 250 North. Storytime with Young Readers, 10 a.m., George W. Bush Childhood Home, 1412 West Ohio Avenue. To include your event on this calendar, please email Rich Lopez at jrlopez@mrt.com. Hello. This is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 7th, 2020. Obituaries and Death Notices. Betty Jolene Smith Roy, 70, passed away on February 3rd, 2020, at her daughter's home in Midland, Texas, surrounded by her family. Services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 8th, 2020, at Lake Ridge Chapel in Lubbock, Texas. The family will receive friends prior to her service from 9:30 a.m. until service time. View her life tribute at www.memorialdesigners.net. She is survived by her one daughter, Christy L. Abbott, and husband Marcus W. Abbott of Midland, Texas, two granddaughters, brothers Russell M. Smith, Jr. and wife Bev of Crum, Texas, Timothy S. Smith and wife Tracy of Monahans, Texas, sister Melody R. Houchin and husband Gil of Overland Park, Kansas, sister-in-law Zotine Smith of Midland, Texas, and numerous nephews and nieces. She is predeceased by her beloved husband, John L. Roy, parents Russell M. Smith, Sr. and Betty C. Long Smith, parents-in-law John L. and Max R. Roy, and her brother Jeffrey D. Smith. Hillside Church, 6202 Milwaukee Avenue, Lubbock, Texas, 79424, has been designated for memorial contributions donated in her memory. Opal Fay Perkins. Miss Opal Fay Perkins, also known as Granny Fay to many of the young people, was born on January 29, 1931, to the late Louis Calvin Perkins and Vivian Ann Morrow Perkins in Franklin, Texas. They left this life on Friday, January 24th, 2020, to go be with her Lord Jesus. Opal was preceded in death by her parents, Lewis and Vivian Perkins, two sisters and seven brothers, two grandchildren, Angela Perkins, Kevin Norris, one great-grandchild, Jasmine Harris, one great-great-grandchild, Jeremy Jan Perkins Miller. She leaves to cherish her memories four daughters, Janice Perkins Belcher, Temple, Texas, Vicki Perkins, Midland, Texas, Vivian Perkins Tinner, Clifford, Midland, Texas, and Kathy Perkins Barron, Midland, Texas, special son-in-law Oscar Harris, Dietrich, two sisters Bernice Hawkins, Sydney, Dallas, Texas, Marion Brown, Sacramento, California, three brothers, Bobby Joe Perkins, Sacramento, California, Jewel Jerry Perkins, Midland, Texas, Royce Perkins, Margaret, Odessa, Texas, 11 grandchildren, 40 great-grandchildren, and 31 great-great-grandchildren, and many, many cousins, nieces, and nephews. Celebration of Life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, February 8th, 2020, at Mount Rose Baptist Church. Arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Otis Trolinder, that's T-R-O-L-I-N-D-E-R. Longtime Midland resident Otis Trolinder died Tuesday, February 4th, in a Jackson, Mississippi hospital. He was 85 years old. Otis was born May 11th, 1934, and grew up in Big Spring, Texas. In 1952, he married his childhood sweetheart, Louise Myers, in Big Spring. She died in 2007 after a long, trying illness. Otis is survived by his present wife, Earlene Robinson, in Carthage, Mississippi, son Jim Trolinder and his wife Bunny in Grants Pass, Oregon, son David Trolinder in Midland, sister Laverne Berryman in Sedona, Arizona, brother Dale Trolinder in Midland, five grandchildren, seven great-grandchildren, and two great-great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday, February 8th, at Ellis Funeral Home, and funeral services will be at 2 p.m. on Sunday, February 9th. Death Notices. Marion Imogen Gover. Marion Imogen Gover, 92, of Midland, passed away January 30th, 2020. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 8th, 2020, at Tishomingo Cemetery in Tishomingo, Oklahoma. Survivors include children Donna Rangel and Ronald Gover. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Bear Creek is a boutique-style smokehouse with history. I like to think of Bear Creek as a boutique-style smokehouse, says Robbie Schultz, a member of a five-generation family that owns and operates Bear Creek Smokehouse in a scenic rural area north of Marshall. Robbie's mother, Brenda Schultz, lives in the old home place. Her husband's parents started the business 76 years ago. They were raising cotton and couldn't make a living doing that, so someone suggested they start raising turkeys, says Brenda. So they did. These hills were covered in turkeys. They dressed them in the backyard and scalded them in iron wash pots. They didn't have a telephone. The county agent took orders in town, and he would drive the orders out here. They would dress the turkeys and deliver them in town, house to house. That's how it began. There are several most popular items in the Bear Creek catalog. Among them are a smoked peppered pork tenderloin and a smoked boneless turkey breast. Bear Creek doesn't raise turkeys. They get them in by the truckloads already processed, then add what Robbie calls the Bear Creek magic before shipping them out. It just developed, says Brenda. One thing led to another. We added to the inventory ham, smoked chicken, bacon, and salt pork. We send out truckloads of salt pork year-round. Last year, the business moved into a 10,000-square-foot building with a ceiling 42 feet high and a front porch that's 100 feet wide. A general store has a bridal registry, Texas souvenirs, and high-end gifts. We design and make our own T-shirts, says Robbie. One of them reads, "Bacon America Great Again." These soups and jars have been real popular for us. We private label these for Neiman Marcus and Dillard's. Robbie has had lots of television exposure. He has judged on Bobby Flay's Food Network show 4 times and has cooked on the Today Show with Al Roker. He was on QVC with Martha Stewart. Television helps quite a bit with brand recognition, he says. The Smokehouse has become a destination. Big-name bands play there. Asleep at the Wheel was to perform there the week after I did this interview. It's a wedding venue and event center in a rustic setting complete with a windmill, turkeys, and longhorns. We want it to be a place where families can come and enjoy the same place where we grew up. Some folks come to sit on the porch and enjoy the view. It's just fun being up here. We love what we do. Bear Creek products go all over the country and beyond. Some customers take them in their luggage when they travel overseas. Bear Creek has 25 employees. The number doubles around Christmas. Robbie does most of the marketing. If you dial 800-950-2327 after hours, you'll hear his distinctive East Texas voice on the answering machine. Tumbleweed Smith, columnist. Stretched succulents can be salvaged by leaf propagation. Succulents can change dramatically in appearance with even the slightest environmental transition, such as bringing them indoors for the winter. If your sedum or echeveria succulents have taken on an unattractive appearance because of etiolation, stretching to reach superior lighting, you can salvage them with propagation. First, if the top of the succulent has a more characteristically condensed appearance, behead and plant it, waiting a week to water. It can grow roots and survive. Second, remove leaves on the lengthened area of the stem. These leaves can grow new succulents. Third, the original rooted stem can remain in soil to grow future leaves. Leaf propagation is perhaps the most complex of these steps, so here is a bit more on that. Place the leaves on a windowsill with good lighting. In a few weeks, most of the leaves will grow roots, and they can be relocated to a tray with succulent soil or cocoa peat. Over the next few months, these rooted leaves will grow new succulents. Keep in bright light and only water when the soil is completely dry, typically twice a month. Here are some tips to help you propagate leaves like a pro. Larger leaves will thrive better than smaller leaves, and sometimes will even grow baby succulents before being put on soil. The leaf needs to make a clean break from the stem and also must be healthy in order to propagate. Scarring is fine, but dry or rotting leaves will not do. It would be rare for all of the leaves to thrive, so do not be discouraged by those that perish. Rooting powder can help. Journal your watering activity to remember if you have gone too long without watering the leaves, which are not yet as drought-tolerant as mature succulents. And finally, some plants are patented or trademarked, which would be noted on the tag when you buy it, with PPAF or PVR. It's worth mentioning that these plants should not be intentionally propagated, particularly with intention to sell. If you have questions about maintaining your succulents, please call the AgriLife office in Midland at 686-4700 for more gardening information. Additional information can be found by visiting the PBMG website, westtexasgardening.org, or AgriLife at aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu. Jesse Clark, Permian Basin Master Gardeners. Cole crops can be transplanted into garden. You've heard of Murphy's Law, right? It states that anything that can go wrong will go wrong. But have you heard of Cole's Law? It's thinly sliced cabbage. Okay, all jokes aside, I found that this was a great time to talk about Cole crops, which include several types of vegetables in the mustard family, such as cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kale, cabbage, and broccoli. In the Permian Basin, it is recommended that you start transplanting your cole crops between February 15th and March 20th. You will need to start off with good transplants, which you can purchase at a local nursery. For best results, cole crops will need to be spaced 18 to 24 inches apart with 36-inch wide rows. If well cared for, cauliflowers and cabbage can spread and grow as large as 2 feet. You can space Brussels sprouts 14 to 18 inches apart because they have a more upright growth pattern. Once transplanted into the garden, make sure you keep your soil moist but not soaked to prevent disease from setting in. Make sure to use mulching, which helps reduce the need for water while reducing weed germination. Mulch also acts as an insulator and regulates the soil temperature. Cole crops also require full sunlight for growth, so keep that in mind when planting. When it comes to disease control, it is important to rotate crops every year. This cultural practice requires no chemicals and helps lessen the continuation of disease and insects year after year. If you take away the disease's home, it will have nowhere to continue its reproductive cycle and hopefully lessen its viability. A good rule to follow is not to plant the same crops of the same family in the same place more than once every 3 or 4 years. Once broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts are ready to be harvested, do so in a timely manner. Delayed harvest will lead to tough, poor-quality produce. Jeanette Castanon, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. This frog is almost the smallest in Lone Star State. Great Plains narrow-mouthed frogs, Gastrophryne olivacea, belong to a frog family that has 3 representatives here in Texas, although it is the only one of its genera that calls West Texas home. This particular variety occurs throughout the state, save for the very northern portions of the Panhandle and the westernmost counties of the Trans-Pecos. It prefers to live in areas of grassland prairies, although many can be observed in the driest portions of the Big Bend area. This frog often resides under round cover, such as man-made debris, rocks, and clumps of vegetation, such as bear grass and various species of ivy. It can thrive in areas without any source of permanent water by living underground for the majority of the time. Here, it can maintain the necessary moisture to prevent desiccation. Outside of Texas, this little frog can be observed from western Oklahoma northward to the north-central states of Nebraska and Iowa. This small species of amphibian is generally quite drab in appearance. The ground color along the smooth back can vary from different shades of gray to olive gray. Occasional specimens can be adorned with numerous black flecks along the dorsum, but this is definitely not the norm. There is a definitive fold of skin across the nape. The back legs are short and stocky, and given that this species is primarily terrestrial, the feet are completely unwebbed and have disproportionately long toes. Adult females are slightly the larger sex, with mature individuals approaching 1.5 inches in body length. Males are smaller, seldom exceeding 1.25 inches. If not for the cricket frog, would hold the title for the smallest frog that occurs in western Texas. Like other amphibians, narrow-mouthed frogs live a dual life. Unlike many frog species that breed in the spring, this variety's breeding habits depend solely on sufficient rainfall events. After these weather events, mature adult males will congregate along the banks of the shallow temporary pools and will call for the attention of females. Their calling voice can be likened to the high-pitched shrill of a sheep bleating. One male can be quite loud on his own. A group of males can be almost deafening. Once a receptive female approaches, the male will clasp the female around the waist and externally fertilize up to 600 eggs. This activity is known as amplexus. Once the eggs hatch, the fish-like tadpoles are primarily herbivorous, and over the period of just a few weeks, the tadpoles metamorph into small froglets, developing air-breathing lungs rather than gills, absorbing the tail, and developing legs. Narrow-mouthed frogs are dietary specialists, with the primary food source being small ants. It will also feed on smaller invertebrate animals as well. Because of its propensity of dwelling underground, as well as its diminutive size, this species is often overlooked entirely. Many are found in residential areas, particularly in in-ground pools, generally during or immediately following a hard rainfall event. Its skin is toxic, and although generally regarded as harmless to humans, one should be cautious to wash your hands after handling this intriguing little frog, or any other animal for that matter. Wild About Texas by Michael Price. It's an accomplishment to use homegrown vegetables in recipes. Dear Heloise, now that the holidays are over, many of us are longing for spring and planting our gardens. No matter how small the yard, it's always fun to grow some of your own vegetables. Tomatoes are easy to grow in a wire cage or even in a pot. There's nothing like homegrown vegetables, picked when they are ripe and ready to be eaten. It's also nice to get the kids involved and teach them where their food comes from and how healthy it is to grow food that isn't coated with wax or insect sprays and isn't genetically modified. Steve and Gloria, Marshall, Illinois. Steve and Gloria, I love growing a few tomatoes, onions, and lettuce. It's always fresh and has a wonderful flavor when it comes straight from the garden. It's also a great sense of accomplishment to see the results and then use those veggies in something like the following recipe. Heloise. Soup weather. Dear readers, I love soup weather, and there's nothing like a hearty, healthy bowl of vegetable soup to warm a chilly evening. One of my favorite recipes is garden cheddar soup. To make it, you'll need 2 carrots peeled and sliced, 2 small zucchinis halved and sliced, 2 tomatoes peeled and cut into wedges, 1 celery stalk sliced, 1 cup portobello mushrooms sliced, 1 onion halved and sliced, 2 garlic cloves minced, 4.5 cups beef broth, 1.5 cups tomato juice, 1 tablespoon fresh basil minced, 1/2 cup dry red wine, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1/2 teaspoon ground pepper, 2 tablespoons fresh parsley minced, 1 cup shredded cheddar cheese. In a stock pot, add first 9 ingredients and heat to boiling. Reduce heat and simmer for 30 minutes or until the vegetables are tender. Stir in basil, wine, salt, pepper, and parsley just before serving. Sprinkle the top of each serving with cheddar cheese. Did you know that when a soup recipe calls for adding wine, generally you'll pour in 1 teaspoon of wine to every cup of soup? Or you can just leave the wine out. Heloise. Peanut butter. Dear Heloise, how long will peanut butter last once it's been opened? Lorna R., Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Lorna, peanut butter keeps well in the pantry for about 2 to 3 months after opening, then refrigerate it to last another 3 to 4 months. Heloise. Cottage cheese. Dear Heloise, why is cottage cheese considered diet food? Kathy Y., Durango, Colorado. Kathy, probably because it's usually made from skim milk, and it's fresh and unfermented. Cottage cheese is also low in fat, contains calcium and protein, but is relatively high in sodium compared with other dairy products. Heloise. Hints from Heloise, King Features Syndicate.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram in Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.